We're up to the parasha of Korach. The parasha of Korach faces us with tremendous challenges. We're faced with the reality that there's machloket she'eino l'shem shamayim. That people can fight and claim that they're fighting for the sake of heaven, yet their fight is not for the sake of heaven. Korach had a long white beard. Korach was one of those who carried the ark. And so Korach had a lot of respect. Korach was extraordinarily wealthy. He was the wealthiest Jew. And Korach came with all kinds of arguments. Korach seemed to have the majority with him, because he had the heads of court with him as well. That's a little bit mind-boggling, how Korach was able to persuade so many people to join his camp. And you see that the Jewish people were ambivalent. He was able to sway the masses against Moshe Rabbeinu. And when we look at last week's parsha, we see another terrifying occurrence. You have the Nesi'im, the leaders of the Jewish people, all turning against Moshe. 10 Nesi'im. You see 2 Nesi'im, Kalev and Yehoshua, who side with Moshe and can't get their tribes to budge. How come? We are enlightened as to a weakness that we have. Moshe emet, v'torato emet. Moshe is true, his Torah is true, and we have to be so wary when we hear about machlokes, arguments. Our parsha is a rude awakening for us about how destructive machlokas can be. And one of the rules we have to remember is that no one shows up and says, I'm about to be a sinner. No one walks in and says, I'm going to unravel the Torah. No one wakes up in the morning and says, come join me. I'm going to destroy everything. Come, I'll destroy you, I'll destroy your families, come join me. No one says that. Everyone says, I'm coming to be pious. Join me. I have good claims. And so our parasha begins. Vayikach Korach. What's going on? Well, Korach has a wife. And Korach's wife isn't so pleased with the honor that her husband is getting. A wife that's interested in her husband's honor can be an asset. A wife that's interested in her husband's honor can be a tremendous handicap. Haman had a wife. Haman was also extraordinarily wealthy. And Haman's wife got him hung. She said, he's a nuisance, that Mordechai. Get rid of him. Build a high tree. Hang him. Go to the king. You're his favorite. Go ahead. You'll get what you want. And by the end of the day, Haman is hanging on that same tree he built. Good job. Right? Zeresh, great job. In our parsha, we don't get to hear who Korach's wife was. But our sages tell us that when the Levites, the Levim, were given their duties, so they underwent the process. Their hair was shaved, they were waved, and they were sprinkled upon, and then they were appointed to their duties. So Korach walks in through the front door, and his wife says, Korach, where'd your beard go? Korach, what's going on? Who did this to you? You know, you're bald. They cut off all your hair. So Korach says, Moshe. She says, really, what else did Moshe do? So he says, they waved us in honor of the new tasks. Now we're Levim. So she goes, really? So Moshe shaves all of your heads and beards and then waves you like you're a lulav or something. Korach, what's going on here? Korach, you should be the leader. You're so holy. You carry the Aron. And so she tells him, I'll make you a talis that's all blue. What does that mean? You have one blue string on your four-cornered garment. I'll make you a completely blue garment. Okay, she's super wealthy. She's got no problem. She makes him a garment that's all blue wool, royal blue. In those days, blue was a sign of royalty. And He, very expensive. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and then he gets 250 heads of the cords. Heads of the cords. It's mind-boggling how you could seduce people who are heads of the cords against Moshe Rabbeinu. And he brings them against Moshe. So, Vayikach Korach. Korach took upon himself to fight. Whenever there's an argument, so there's a choice a person makes. Am I going to fight? Vayikach Korach. Korach took upon himself to fight. He took with him Dasan and Aviram. They were upset that Moshe had the leadership and not their tribe, the tribe of Reuven. They were upset that the tribe of Ephraim, Yoshua Binun, has leadership. And he takes 250 heads of the Sanhedrin who were all Bechoros. Initially the Bechoros had rights, the firstborn had rights to offer sacrifices. And Korach is missing one key understanding. Korach doesn't realize that what's driving him is jealousy. And there is no cure for jealousy. When a person decides that he's jealous of his friend, so he will pursue him and he will pursue him, he will pursue the honor, he will pursue the rulership, it will lead a person to their own demise, to their own downfall. Because that's what the verse says in Mishlei and Proverbs, Ukav atzamot kina. Jealousy causes a person to rot in their bones. Jealousy destroys the person who's jealous. They will pursue and they will pursue and they won't be satiated. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avot, Hakina v'atava v'akavod motzi'in et ha'adam min ha'olam. They cause a person's demise when a person is in pursuit of their jealousy, in pursuit of their honor. And from the days of Cain and Hevel, jealousy is what's been bringing destruction to the world. Cain brings a sacrifice. Ve'hevel hevi gamhu. Hevel is jealous. Hevel says, I'm also bringing a sacrifice. So he says, let me be more like my father Adam. So Hevel brings an animal. Okay? Hevel was jealous of Cain. Cain gets jealous of Hevel. How come your sacrifice did better than mine? Gentlemen, what's going on here? You're jealous? So Cain kills Hevel. The first murder is over jealousy in the worship of Hashem. Think about it. They're jealous in the worship of Hashem. But it's jealousy. People think that in the service of Hashem, there won't be jealousy. Not true. We see this throughout Jewish history. And big people. Korach, the heads of court. Shimi ben Gera. Shaul. Giants. Our sages say that even the transgression of Adam HaRishon stemmed from the jealousy of the angels. They were jealous of what Adam HaRishon could do. Korach's jealous. Why isn't he getting more greatness? You always have to hear what the underlying message is. What are people saying? What's really going on here? So Korach is coming out of jealousy. But Korach doesn't walk in and say, gentlemen, I'm jealous, make me the Kohen Gadol. It's not what Korach says. Korach says, look, we're all holy. We should all be leaders. Who needs Moshe as a leader? So Korach walks in and brings a talis that's all blue wool. Korach says, everyone's holy. Everyone, we all heard God talk at Sinai. Really, there's no difference. We're all the same. Moshe is not different than anyone. Korach, didn't you hear what happened to Aaron and Miriam when they spoke about Moshe? What's going on here? But jealousy drives a person. Jealousy drives a person to their own destruction. They don't see what they're doing. Korach was privy to what would happen in the future. We sometimes think if we'll only know what the future holds, we'll have a better life. And Chazal repeatedly show us that knowledge of the future destroys people. If we go back to the story of Yosef and Potiphar's wife, our sages say Potiphar's wife saw that the greatest Jews were yet to come from her family and Yosef. And she was right. Her daughter would marry Yosef, and from them would come the greatest Jews, from Yoshua bin Nun to Mashiach ben Yosef. She knew all of that. And she made a mistake. She thought it was supposed to be her and Yosef. So even though she was a married woman, she went in pursuit of Yosef. She must have had a good excuse. Her husband was a eunuch. He was castrated. She probably had some kind of excuse why she thought it was permissible. But at the end of the day, her knowledge of the future was her detriment. She was certain that good things were supposed to come of her and Yosef. But she's a married woman. Korach saw that the future held that he would have a descendant that would be greater than Moshe and Aaron. Korach foresaw that he would be the progenitor of Shmuel. And so Korach also knew that there would be 24 watchings, 24 of Mishmarot Leviyah from his descendants. So Korach figured, I'm not going down. The world needs me. I have a future. And Moshe said, you should know one person's coming out of here alive. So Korach figured, I guess that's going to have to be me. How do you make such a mistake? He's risking everything. He loses everything. Jealousy blinds people. Jealousy blinds people. And we have to be careful. Chazal tell us, this is where I say, be a little bit superstitious. Be careful of the evil eye. In the sense that people should try to keep their successes modest. People don't have to know you're succeeding. People don't need to know you have a beautiful marriage. They don't need to know you made $1 million. They don't need to know that you're succeeding in anything. Because Hashem created this world where people are jealous. The nature of people is that when they see something else is going good for someone, they don't say, great, he should have it even better. What they say is, why don't I have it as good as him? That's the nature of people. So a person doesn't want to arouse other people's jealousy. And that's why Chazal advised us, you keep things modest, you have a better chance at long-term success. Short-term, you can succeed. But once people see it and get jealous, so then you see where Korach. Good evening. Yes, sir.
How does the Ayin Hara affect you? Because people looking at you with jealousy, but how does it end up?
So on the basic level, a person's arousing other people's jealousy. You see here how Korach was able to bring so many people against Moshe Rabbeinu. Do we want people to say negative things about us? Do we want people to view us negatively and act negatively against us? On the basic level, it's not in your interest. You see it even in... let's say you're a plumber. You're doing great as a plumber. You're making a mint. You buy a new house, you buy two new houses. You're going to go tell everyone. So when they have a choice whether to recommend you as a plumber, so somewhere in their subconscious, they're going to say, he's making good money. Let me recommend someone else. Did you win or did you lose? So that's on a basic level. However, we are also taught that the way people look at us does affect things in heaven. That, so to speak, if things are going good for a person in heaven, they don't stop it. But if someone looks with the evil eye, basically what happens is they're making a claim to heaven and they're saying, why does he have it better than me? And that way of looking at someone, so to speak, it causes that in heaven they say, okay, he has a claim, let's open the books and see if it's legitimate or not. There's this concept that things continue going on autopilot until there's a reason to stop them. But when someone comes with a claim, when someone says, Rabbon Shalom, why does he have it better than me? So then the guy sued you, they're going to check. They're going to open the books. So Moshe's facing a huge crowd. 250 heads of Sanhedrin. That's a scary thing. So Korach purposely comes and there are a lot of people around. He wants to make noise. He brings 250 people and they're standing there innocently as though they have no intention, and he and Datan and Aviram start making their claims. There are masses, and then you have the 250 people that he set up, and then what Korach does is, as he and Datan and Aviram make the claims, these people are supposedly, not supposedly, they were learned people, start saying, "Hey Moshe, no, Korach has a point. Moshe, wait a second, what is the logic that tzitzis only has one blue string?" Now imagine 250 people doing this to Moshe. So Moshe's trying to get a thought across, Moshe's trying to explain something, but they're not interested in listening. They're interested in putting him down. Korach says, "You know these Jewish people? They're holy from their heel to their head. Holy people. Why do you think you're holier than them?" So now Korach starts move number two. Korach says, "You know, when my wife came to ask you questions, I'm not so comfortable. I don't know what happened between you and my wife. I am hereby putting out an official warning that my wife should never be alone with you, Moshe." And Dasan starts seconding the voice. And Dasan says, "You know what? I'm also wondering what happens when my wife comes to ask questions. Moshe, I am hereby making an official warning. You should never be alone with my wife again." Aviram follows suit. The 250 heads of court follow suit. Moshe Rabbeinu standing there, and suddenly he's being accused of committing adultery. People are saying, "Moshe, we're not so clear on what's going on with you." And Moshe falls on his face. Moshe's down in shame. What's he supposed to say? He starts praying. And Hashem tells him, "Here's what you tell Korach." So Moshe tells Korach, "You know, one of us is holy. You guys are claiming," says Moshe, "that I am very unholy. Well, the Ribono Shel Olam will reveal who is holy, who is close to him, and who he has chosen." And so Korach, he tells him, "Each of you is going to take one of those pans and put in those pans the Ktores, and the one man that God chooses, he's walking out alive." Moshe is giving them a challenge. He's sure they will pull away. What Moshe is trying to do is show them how wrong they are. What Moshe is trying to accomplish is scare them. They know that when Aaron's own sons, Dasan and Aviram, Nadav and Avihu, when Aaron's sons, the two Kohanim, put in Ktores that was unwarranted, they died. So Moshe is telling them, "You guys want? We'll have a real challenge." But in his challenging them, he thinks to himself, "There's no way they're going to agree." Moshe tells them, "If you guys walk out alive tomorrow, I agree. I'm with you." Moshe's putting everything on the chopping block. "We'll try." But Moshe's telling them very clearly, "You ain't walking out alive tomorrow." Now this shows us how far they went. It means they were really willing to put their lives on the line in challenging Moshe and whether what Moshe was saying was true. It's mind-boggling. Moshe turns to Korach and he says, "You guys have so much greatness. Rav lachem." And our sages say, Moshe shouldn't have said that one sentence. It's also a frightening thought, our sages teach us, that even as Moshe's defending himself, Hashem holds him to task over every word he says. Rav lachem. Our sages say he should not have said that. "You guys have enough greatness." So last year in the WhatsApp message, I think we've already come full circle, Michal. I think last year I was already having WhatsApp messages in Parashas Korach. I think so. And I think that what I said last year on this is that it seems that Hashem does not want any human being, even Moshe Rabbeinu, to tell another human being, you have enough honor. That's something which we're not supposed to say to someone else. When Hashem takes Moshe to task on Rav Lachem, it says that when Moshe will fight for his life, when Hashem will tell Moshe it's time to die, and Moshe will start arguing, Hashem will answer him with the same terminology. Hashem will tell him, Rav Lach. And Hashem purposely uses that same terminology back to him, you've had enough, in order to teach us that a person should not tell someone else, you've had enough, in terms of honor. On the one hand, Korach is in pursuit of honor. On the other hand, perhaps we're not supposed to tell someone else you have enough honor. Maybe that's not within the realm of what we're supposed to do. Moshe Rabbeinu tries to point out to them how much Hashem has given them. That the tribe of Levi has been singled out. Moshe Rabbeinu says, don't you realize your rebellion isn't against me? It's against Hashem. Then Moshe Rabbeinu sends to summon Dasan and Aviram. Dasan and Aviram say, Lo Nale, we are not coming up to the court. Our sages say, the Medrash says that what Dasan and Aviram said is, Lo Nale, we are not going to go up to the land of Israel. Moshe, you're lying when you say at the end of 40 years we're going into Israel. That's not going to happen. You haven't brought us to the land of Israel. Why do you think in 40 years you'll be able to do it? Are you going to suddenly blind all the people in Israel? How are you going to succeed? You don't have any way of succeeding. You're just selling people a load of goods so that they'll keep following you. And when they say this, so they're trying to arouse all of Israel against Moshe. They're taking away the hope of what Moshe promised them. Moshe gets very upset. And he prays to Hashem. He says, you know, I haven't taken a thing from them. I've never done them any harm. And Hashem, don't turn to what they offer you, even if they have intentions in your honor. It's interesting. The Torah repeatedly shows us how Moshe did not want to be the leader, and Moshe is repeatedly blamed that he's interested in honor. That's what Dasan and Aviram and Korach are arguing. Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Ribbono Shel Olam, even if they bring a sacrifice, I don't forgive them. Our sages say a person cannot ask Hashem for atonement if the person they wronged doesn't forgive them. Yom Kippur doesn't help them. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, I don't forgive them. Here we learn an interesting concept. There's a Gemara and there's a Halacha. The Gemara says a person is not supposed to say, I'm giving over my case to heaven. You're not supposed to say that. Sarah said that to Avram. She said to Avram, Yishpot Hashem b'ni uvenecha. She said, I've given you my maid. She's putting me down. You're not standing up for my honor. God should judge between us. Our sages say, Sarah said that she died first. She brought about her own demise. There were rabbis she could have turned to. There were rabbis in those days. And she didn't turn to them. The Beit Medrash of Shem and Aver. She had a claim against Avram. Why is she getting God into the picture? So, her sages say she brought about her own demise. However, it says in Shulchan Aruch, what happens if a person has no venue to turn to? What happens if there is no court? What happens if he has no ability to charge the person who has harmed him? Is he then not allowed to turn to heaven? Halacha says then he is allowed to turn to heaven. And that's what we find throughout Psalms, throughout Tehillim, that David HaMelech does turn to heaven against his enemies. So on the one hand, our sages say, you better be right. Because when a person turns his case to heaven, heaven analyzes him first. And if a person turns to heaven, even if he's right, in heaven they say, wait a second, who are you? Why did you charge the other person to heavenly court? However, here we see Moshe Rabbeinu, David HaMelech. There were giants of Jewish history who did it and won. But you got to be real careful because it's like dynamite. Sarah Imenu did it. and she lost. And our sages give us other examples of giants of Jewish history who did it and lost. They brought about their own demise. And so our sages say, it's not recommended to turn over one's case to heaven. However, Moshe Rabbeinu does it here, and David HaMelech does it. Yeah.
How high does the court have to be? Like today we don't have like a saddle or something that level.
And the question is, do you have a tool?
And Sarah's before the Torah.
The idea is, was there a tool? Was there a way of dealing with it without getting heaven involved? That's the question. Doesn't have to be a high court. It could be a rabbi who will listen to him. Yes?
Moshe Rabbeinu didn't forgive them. Is it right not to do that?
They were threatening to undermine the whole Torah. One person can say that the Torah that Moshe teaches is tainted. That when Moshe says you need one string of blue, and they're saying, no, you made it up. Well, if Moshe Rabbeinu made it up, then who's to say where it ends? There are stances that when a person takes, they're undermining the whole Torah. It's not like anything can be forgiven. There are situations where, no, it cannot be forgiven. If they would get away with what they said, then there's no Torah. And that's why Moshe says to the Ribbono Shel Olam, he says, either make it very clear to everyone that they're liars and have the ground swallow them up, and if not, then I'm leaving. Then I'll join their side. It's an unusual statement our sages say in the name of Moshe Rabbeinu. What are you threatening heaven? What does that mean? How could a person say such a thing? So I don't think it means Moshe literally said, Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm going to switch sides. His point was, you can't expect me in any way to have legitimacy if you don't make a sign, if you don't show the people that they're liars. It's a challenging thing because Korach is a recurring theme in our lives. There are many Korachs walking around. There have been movements throughout our history who have tried in the name of piety to undermine all of Judaism. It's not a new thing. Since Korach, there have been people who, in theoretically pious ways, have come and said, we're going to go against the tradition, the Torah, the halacha. And on the one hand, we want to be kind to the individual. On the other hand, we have to recognize the threat of the movement. We would love to forgive, but we can't always forgive. I'll tell you a story off the record.